I'm seeing some comments in here that are sort of about the like 86 collectibles and Mike Kemmel talking about like a monopoly. And I think that you guys and the hobby in general is misdirecting a lot of your frustration in terms of these single licenses. You're misdirecting it at, I believe, so take this for you. You don't have to believe me, but this is my thought and I'm entitled to it, right? Is that you're misdirecting your frustration at, say, Fanatics or at, say, a Group Breaker. And single licenses have been the way since 2000 and, you know, 9, 10 in that era, you know, across the sports. I think the real frustration should be directed or is more reasonably directed at the leagues, at the licensors, at the leagues and the PAs. They are the ones who are saying, we only want one licensee in the sports card category. That's all they want. So does it not make sense if you love America or if you love Canada, you love North America, then you have to understand you live in a capitalistic society and that the people with the most entrepreneurial spirit are going to and the most ability to convince and to negotiate are going to try and get that single license. And that just happens to be Fanatics. So it doesn't matter, Stephen, and everyone, if it's Fanatics that has it or Panini or Topps or Upper Deck or Leaf or some new company coming in, you guys are going to be frustrated with that company no matter who they are. And if you have to get that into your heads that the frustration is with, I believe, the wrong group. It should be with the leagues. And if you really have an issue with it, you know, take it to those licensors, take it to the people who are making the decision that a monopoly, I air quote it, because I'd rather use the term that a single license is the way to go. That's who you should be taking your frustration out with, I believe, not Fanatics, not on that topic. If you have issues with how Fanatics is doing things, that's another question. That's another story. Or Upper Deck or Panini or Topps. What do you think of that, Stephen? Am I barking up the wrong tree, or does that make sense to you?
No, I agree with that. And then I also want to say, like, we're going to have all the players under one product. Like, don't you want to open up a basketball product where you have a chance of LeBron James autographs? You know, don't you want to open up Topps Chrome football? Yeah, like everyone has to pick and choose. And right now we're doing Prism doesn't have, you know, CJ Stroud autos or whatever. Like it could all, because at the end of the day, those companies are going to fight with each other and someone's going to always have someone someone else doesn't have. I think it hurts the end collector at the end of the day. You know, if you're a purist, like it should all be uniformed and it should all just be, you know, this is what they are. And all the players are under the same type of umbrella.
Yeah. I mean, Upper Deck having MJ and having LeBron for so long, that was part of their, I believe, survival after they lost basketball and football and baseball. And it's like, we still have two of the biggest athletes of all time under our umbrella, and we can do other things with them. But the collectors of those, and it's funny because, you know, the basketball collectors specifically, as far as Jordan and LeBron go, you know, on one hand, they're frustrated that they can't get LeBron and Jordan. And I think it's the sellers that are probably more frustrated than the buyers that they can't get those autographs. Whereas the people who've been collecting LeBron and Jordan autographs for many, many years don't want that to happen because they want their cards to remain valuable. There's a lot of concern amongst LeBron collectors right now that with Fanatics getting LeBron and more LeBron licensed LeBron autos entering the marketplace, that those old Upper Deck autos may go down in value. What do you think? What do you think of that? The potential for that and that discussion.
I mean, yeah, for sure. Like first to the market, LeBrons right now are going to definitely go for more than, you know, if they produce LeBrons for the next 5 years tops. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to be easy to hit LeBrons, you know. So how many Bradys were you able to hit in Panini products? He was very scarce. So I think it's not going to really hurt as much as those people think it's going to hurt. their current autographs. So they're not going to be flooding the market with Jordan autos. You know, it's going to kind of be like short printed to five. Let's pull one of these. And it's like a grail hit.
And that's what Upper Deck's been doing with Gretzky. I mean, even though there are plenty of Gretzky autos out there because they, you know, it's a big draw for the product, but they do, they're not flooding the market with them, which I think is good. Foul Fiveball says, did the leagues just want one license? No, actually they did. The insider information I've heard is that the leagues did want one license, so they didn't have to deal with more than one. So yeah, they did. And it's on them. The competition is not present between within each of the sports for sure. There's some talk about an unopened case of 1979 OPG hockey. Someone asked if Fanatics will buy it. I don't think this is the right show for that question. Are you even aware of that it exists? Do you know what I'm talking about? No. Okay, we'll just skip that. We'll just skip that altogether. Okay. All right. Let's talk about repacks, because the repack thing is another kind of controversial topic as of late, Stephen, where a lot of breakers have, my understanding, have moved over to the repack because maybe the breaking business hasn't been as good, or they're not getting allocation. And then there's the issues around repacks of, are they transparent, and are, you know, is it really fair? You know, first of all, what have you guys done as far as repacks? I have a whole bunch of questions here. They were all in there. First, okay, so what have you guys done for repacks? And in this group of questions, I'll also kind of say, like, did you need to move to repacks, or is it something that you guys have done because it's just another revenue stream, another way to get product out there?
All right, so when we first started doing repacks, you, like, it's a learning process, right? There's no regulation. Again, there's no rule book on how to do it. So the first thing we did that I would say we did wrong was not having a checklist. No one has checklists really for the repacks, but we now have a checklist, which is really, I think, should be the standard in the hobby. If you have a repack, there has to be a checklist, because you could be chasing a card that doesn't even exist. Number two, to address your second part, we didn't do it because we felt it was another revenue stream or we had to. We felt like it added value to the breaks that we were doing, because a lot of times, you know, you could open up a case of Bowman Chrome and the best card's $300. But if we're throwing in a $500 box or $500 box, you know, you're guaranteed, just out of that one box, you're guaranteed a card that's minimum $150 with the upside of, in our current line, 10,000 or 12,000, whatever it is. So in our run, there's 1,000 cards. Obviously, there's one card that's worth 12,000. There's a Ruth cut in there. But so the odds, but there's still better odds probably than you hitting the Brady 12 of 50, right? You know, there's only 1,000 boxes. So we felt like it was just a way to add value. So someone was leaving the break guaranteed with something of value, you know?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to this question from 86 Collectibles. What happens if 90% of the hobby doesn't like the product that comes out? We have no other companies to support. Not saying this will happen, just saying if. And I mean, I just want to take a stab at that first, Stephen. And this goes back to the whole, like, single license thing. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We've been through it enough now where nobody liked Panini Prism when it came out in 2012, yet look at it now. So, I mean, quite simply, it's not even worth discussing, in my opinion, because it's, and the other thing when it comes to Fanatics is that they acquired Topps, and Topps has been making cards for 70 years. So I think part of them acquiring Topps was in order to mitigate the risk that they don't put out product nobody likes, because if we acquire a brand that's been around a while, and a lot of the people, a lot of the IP, we're really mitigating that risk. So I don't think it's going to happen. And if it does, what's going to happen? Well, then it's going to fix itself. Why? Because if no one buys the product, the royalties are going to come down that are going back to the leagues and the PAs. And then they're going to have to find a way to fix that, because they're going to want to, you know, regenerate that money. So that's what happened. That might be the best thing for people who want there to be more than one license, is that But the problem is, in this hobby, we've learned the hobby doesn't speak with its wallet. It wants to speak with its wallet. It will bitch and complain nonstop, but they never, generally speaking, they never speak with their wallet. So it's just not going to happen. And because the hobby doesn't speak with its wallet, except that they just empty it, we're probably going to be in the single licensee era for a very long time, are my thoughts. Anything to add to that, Stephen?
I mean, I think this is just the beginning. Like, where it's going to happen within 18 months, right? Is that when Panini's license is up? I think
it's coming up. It's around the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's inevitable now. And
yeah,
no point of even complaining about it at this point.
Yeah. Either adapt into it or put your money and attention and passion elsewhere, because that's where you are right now. You know, plus you have 140 years of sports cards in the past that you could also go back to and continue to collect. I want to touch one more thing on repacks, because you said something good and there's some comments in the chat. I agree. I think there's two things to make a repack bulletproof. One is full transparency. So transparency of the checklist. So if it's a 50 card product, 50 repack product, 50 packs available, here's all 50 cards. And I'm going to sell them one at a time, but I'm not going to open them on my live stream channel until they're all sold. So if you buy the first one, you better be prepared to wait until I sell that 50th one. And then I'm opening them all on one broadcast, one live stream, all 50 packs, one live stream, so that everybody can see that all 50 of those cards on the checklist came out of that pack. To me, that makes for a bulletproof repack product and system. What do you think of that?
So in theory, yes, I do agree, and I like the idea. It's just when you're trying to do a run, or you're just trying to use them to throw into breaks as like a juicer for the break to add value to the break, then it becomes hard. I think, though, everything needs to be opened up on stream. Can't sell anything through the website, ship sealed, can't sell anything in your storefront. Like, it all has to be traceable, right? So if someone's like, hey, that card never came out, be like, let's go back, because we know that card was hit on stream. The checklist is definitely very important. But then also, back to the regulations, like any company making their own product, you can rig it, right? Like, you definitely can rig it. So it comes down to reputation. You have to be able to trust them, have to be able to like believe that they're not rigging it. And then like, it wouldn't be the worst thing to have a third party. Like, you curate it, you make your checklist, and then you have somebody do the packing that has nothing to do with you. So nobody in your company knows where anything is. Because at the end of the day, like, we have a room we produce the repacks in, and it's like, subconsciously, I have an idea of the vicinity that case is, you know? So it's like, I send my guys in there, I'm like, somebody go pick a case. Because, like, I'm not doing it, you know? Because, like, if I don't pick that case, it's even worse, because, like, if I go to the left because I think it's on the right, it's even worse, because it's like, I'm, you know? So it's like, it's almost better to get somebody to regulate it, an outside party, where they just pack it, they bring it back, and it's like, here's your cards.
Yeah, that's a good idea for sure. I think that's another bullet point to add to the list I started there of, you know, how to make a repack product bulletproof. Michael says, is Fanatics going to favor their live breakers over hobby shops on unopened product? I mean, you're obviously not qualified to answer this, but I'll put it out there for discussion anyway.
You kind of have to look at where's more of the product selling, right? I would guess if I'm running the business, like, I'm sending the product to where most of it's going to sell. So if a hobby shop wants 50 cases, but they can move 10, that's like back to what I was talking about, the Wild West. People were getting cases they couldn't even sell, but they were flipping them. So, like, how's that helping the hobby? You know, the hobby shops allocated 15 cases. They could sell two in store, but they're flipping the other 13 to breakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same thing, right? So now it's like, my hobby shop's complaining they're only getting X amount of cases. It's like, yeah, because they're not flipping them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's keep going. Foul of Fiveball says, when Fanatics buys or puts Upper Deck out of business for the hockey license, will you change your mind about Fanatics, Jeremy? No, I'm a logical thinker, Foul of Fiveball. I'm also a realist. So will I change my opinion? No, I probably won't. Like, I love Upper Deck cards. I personally think Upper Deck makes the best quality card. I think they're the look and feel, the weight, just the, I think Upper Deck makes the best cards out there personally. Now, if Fanatics were to buy Upper Deck and keep the brands and keep the, you know, most of the people like they have with Tops, I believe, I'm not sure. I know they did for a while. You know what? I'm going to judge it at the time. I can't say that right now because this comment assumes it's going to happen. I'm not making that assumption. I'm not even close to making that assumption. If and when it happens, yeah, I'm going to reserve the right to change my opinion. I'm human. I'm entitled to that. But I'll understand it. I will understand it because it's the way of the world. And I'm also somebody who I like change and I adapt to change. You, if you don't adapt to change, you know, you're going to be left behind in not just in the hobby, but in life, in the whole world. You will be left behind if you cannot adapt to change. So, I mean, that's how I live. That's how I want to continue living. And then what I'll do is if I don't like the cards, I will not buy them. I don't buy modern product already. I wait a few years. You know, I see how the players do. I don't prospect. I don't do any of that. So, I mean, we'll see what comes with it. But, you know, I understand that breaking and that modern product is a huge part of the hobby. I understand the Fanatics is a huge part of the hobby right now. And I'm very interested and hopeful for the long-term health of the hobby. But, you know, I'm one small voice. I don't have a say in it. So I'm going to adapt because I don't have a vote. And even in your federal politics, yeah, you have a vote and it's important, but if you vote one way or the other yourself, is that going to change the outcome? You know, maybe not. Did you want to jump in with something, Steven?
Yeah, I just want to touch base. I see a lot of comments on the break comp thing. So I just want to clarify, like, I do think in theory, it's a great idea. I think that one thing they should do is kind of like make tiers, right? Because somebody selling a product on Fanatics compared to somebody selling it off platform, accepting Zelle payment, right off the bat, you can't compete with that, right? And then it's also like you should have, you know, the breakers that are similar to each other, the bigger breakers, the operations, you know, because it kind of does. I see right now they're going to war with somebody, but it's just compare that person to the other breakers in their field. If that breaker is still grossly overpriced, they're grossly overpriced. But to compare, you know, a company with 25 employees or 15, 20 employees to a company that's one person with two cases, it makes that company look, it makes us sometimes look terrible. Like, we'll be ranked like 28 out of 30, but it's like to a lot of people on that list, like we're within $200 of our quote unquote real competitors, you know? So like, that's one thing I think could be refined. Like you say, hey, these are the guys, you know, the one-offs. And then this is, you know, your top 10, the hobby's top 10, what they're priced at. I think that's the one gripe I would say that can make it a little better.
And with all these things, like all these discussion topics that we are going through here tonight, I think, like, you know, whether it be, you know, group breaking at just as a service in the hobby and how it's going, the single license, the Fanatics coming in, what they're doing, and, you know, what all of these, the repack, all of these things, we have to understand, guys, we are in a transitional period here still. You know, the hobby is in a transitional period. And until some of these things flush out, and it doesn't happen that fast. These things are going to take a couple of years, if not like five years. You know, I don't know about you guys, but like, I guess I'm a little bit more patient. I'm also not pumping money into certain things, so I can afford to be patient. I spend plenty of money in the hobby, don't get me wrong, but I mean, we are in a transitional period, and you have to understand that, you know, the talk about regulation that we had earlier and some of this, some of these different things, the pricing models, these are things that are going to improve over time, but you're not going to just like blink your eyes like I Dream a Genie. Some of you might not know that reference, and eventually end up in a perfect world by all of your guys's, you know, standards, by everyone else, by your standards, everyone out there. It's not just going to happen. It's going to take time to get there. Just like everything takes time to evolve and you know, find its equilibrium and find it, its best representation in the hobby. So there's, but in during this transitional period, we're a very impatient hobby. We're a very impatient society now, right? With instant gratification, all that, you know about that. I mean, you have to understand these things aren't going to happen right away. And if you expect them to, again, you're just causing yourself a lot of frustration because it's not going to happen any other way. Now, if it never works itself out, and I think the one thing we talked about, you know, Fanatics coming in and putting some standards on the group breakers that are under their umbrella, that is the step towards being better. I'm not saying everything Fanatics is doing is towards being better. I don't know. But that is a step towards evolving the hobby into an eventual state that is going to be better for the customers. And now, again, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that everything they're doing is going to end up in that. And Fanatics is going to make mistakes along the way. Probably they have made mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. But I feel like a company like that who has so much money on the line and they have to answer to investors, you know, they're going to fail fast. They're going to try and fix these things as fast as they can and just rectify. You know, every entrepreneur, Stephen, you had failures along the way before you started Filth Bomb. You know, there's more failures than there are successes for almost every successful entrepreneur out there. And again, this is reality. It's just the way the world works. So comments to you after I've been speaking there for a while, Stephen, please.
No, you just got to wait and see how it all shakes up. You know, there seems to be a storyline in place right now, or people are going with the whole 10xing the hobby is terrible, making, you know, it's a joke. You gotta just wait and see, because nobody did anything with the hobby until COVID, and then you just saw the tip of the iceberg of what was actually capable of the hobby, right? Although it was unregulated, it was just, I keep saying the Wild West, but that's what it was. Like, there was so much potential. And now it's going to take 5 years, 10 years before we're actually able to get it to what, I mean, Fanatics has the money, but you could have the same vision without having that money. Like, you know what the potential is of the hobby, right? Like, you know what it's capable of, you know what it could be. It's just Fanatics has a bankroll to, you know, do it.
And they are doing it. Michael says, I wouldn't mind seeing some new OPG Chrome refractors again. Well, that's what OPG Platinum is. That is your OPG Chrome. He also says, I think a lot of collectors feel like big business is taking control of their hobby and don't like it. I got to tell you, they're just, I mean, fair enough that they're seeing it that way. Panini was a big business. Panini is owned by Panini out of Italy. Panini America owned by Panini out of Italy. Big business. Topps has been in business for, you know, 75 years. Upper Decks, and these aren't multi huge conglomerates, but these are big. And Topps is owned by Disney. That's big business. Now it's owned by Fanatics. I'm not sure which company is bigger, Fanatics or Disney. I'm thinking Disney might be bigger, but I could be wrong. I could be way off on that. I just don't know. But I think a lot of collectors that this comment references just, you know, are only selectively seeing things. And again, I don't have a horse in the race personally. I don't get into breaks. The odd time I go into breaks, but again, I think it could be Fanatics or anybody else that has the single license, and we'd have a lot of the same complaints for sure, I think. So Terp Enforcer says, and welcome to the show, Terp, says, some people think the hobby is dying, but really the hobby is just correcting itself from COVID. I think that's exactly right. I mean, again, if you run the graphs and you just take out, you know, 2021, things are looking okay as far as the, you know, cards from the old, as far as like, you know, vintage goes and card, you know, pre-pandemic type of cards for sure. And then Adam Rip says, doesn't matter if Disney or Fanatics is bigger, Filth Bomb is bigger than both combined. Adam Rips, welcome to the show. Yeah. Nice tongue-in-cheek comment, but we get the sentiment for sure. All right. Let me ask you this here, because a lot of, you know, there is this distinction, Stephen, between customers of group breaks and people who like ripping wax versus people who just want to buy singles. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of customers of a lot of group break customers are getting their cards and then they're selling them. They're selling them to get more money to either buy singles or go into more group breaks. My question is, how do we as a hobby and how do you as a group breaker work to convert some of these breaking customers into lifelong collectors? Is that possible? Are you doing anything to do that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to do it with the baseball collector for sure. Because like we spoke about in the past, you and I, you know, the baseball collector, there's somebody for everyone. So when we run player breaks, for example, and in baseball, we're selling Ernie Banks, we're selling Johnny Bench, we're selling Dale Murphy, we're selling Julio Rodriguez, we're selling Wyatt Langford. And all these guys sell, you know? So it's like you do have the diehard collector. You have a 28-year-old out there that actually wants to buy an Ozzie Smith autograph, right? Like, that's pretty cool. And it's like, it's very, it goes very hand in hand. But then at the same token, you try to do a player break on football and you try to sell Roger Staubach's spot. Good luck. I don't know. I couldn't, nobody wants a Roger. Like they do, but they don't in card world, right? Somebody will wait online for an autograph from him, but nobody wants his card. But they're just chasing Pickett, Burrow, Herbert, Tua. And there's like the top 1% on the checklist and then no one else. Everyone else is dead. Like you can't move anyone. So
I've
it's
got,
a lot of.
I've got a buddy in the hobby who likes to say, and I think he says it half tongue in cheek, but if you're on Instagram and you follow people, you probably follow this guy. He likes to say that nobody collects football cards. And, you know, because listen, people open football cards and I have a small football collection. I think I have what, maybe 18 to 20 cards in my personal football collection. What is your perspective? Your perspective of football hobby? I'll call them hobbyists, so I don't have to call them collectors. Football hobbyists versus baseball hobbyists and basketball and even hockey hobbyists.
So, like everyone is a collector, but an investor at the same time, right? So, like. Football cards and basketball cards are way too volatile. It's like crypto. And baseball cards are a lot more safe, a lot more conservative. You're not going to see the huge, huge, huge jump unless it's like once in a generation, Otani, something like that. But football, man, it's week to week. You know, somebody could be selling for 10X and now he's minus 10X the next week. Basketball the same way. So I do think there's like, it's so hard, man. It's because people do collect, right? But not to the same, like, I feel like baseball is the true collectors and people don't collect the same way on the other sports. It is, I want to stay away from the word gambling because they're not really gambling, but they're looking to buy to flip.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think baseball has a bit of both. I think my thoughts on you know, the strength of the collector bases are baseball has the strongest foundation of collectors right from vintage until modern. There are people who've been collecting top sets from 1954 until 2024. They want them all, right? So I think that's, or 52. I think that's a very strong collector base. But it also has the prospectors, which is really, you know, it's like I relate it to day trading, and I know there are many differences, but that's just kind of how I compare it. I look at that as kind of the day trading where the collector or the investor of vintage cards is more of the long-term investor in the financial markets. Then I think second most healthiest foundation is in hockey. Hockey has a very strong foundation of collectors. It has its prospectors too, but at a much lower degree, all else being equal, relatively speaking, to baseball. And then you've got basketball, which is, you know, it's lots of the flipper mentality, lots of the most recent rookie, lots of money that goes into, you know, similar to football with the quarterbacks. And football is where I'm not so sure, because I think that, like, I know there are people that collect vintage football, but I wanted to sort of, you know, first of all, get your thoughts on what I just went through. And then, you know, when it comes to football, any sport really, investors, people who are hobbyists with an investment mindset are going to look to the goats of the sport. Basketball, it's easy to identify. Hockey, it's pretty easy. Baseball, a little bit harder, but still, you know, there's lots of great players in the history. And then football, it's like, you know, who are the goats? Like, we'll come, Joe Montana, Barry Sanders come to mind for me. And then, of course, Tom Brady, you know, goes without saying. I want you to lead off your response to this with, like, who are people collecting? Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and Joe Montana and Dan Marino and John Elway and all these guys, Randy Moss, even all these guys through the 80s and 90s, that Jerry Rice, I might have said him already. Like, do these guys have, in your estimate, a loyal collector base?
Yeah, but I don't, it's so weird. I don't think it's a card collector base. I think it's a memorabilia collector base. They have those guys that are willing to wait on the TriStar line for like 8 hours, you know, to get a meet and greet. Whereas, I mean, I think the perfect way to see it is just look at like the downtown sales, right? Go look at a Barry Sanders and then compare him to a superstar vet that's not a quarterback right now. And it's like the sales aren't very strong, you know, like Saquon Barkley sells for as much as Barry Sanders on the downtown. Saquon's, you know. I think it's more memorabilia for those kind of guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what about, you know, we're going to go to comments because this helps a lot here. Dan here says there are tables at vintage card shows with just football and just basketball, and they have just as much foot traffic as baseball tables. I mean, I don't buy that, Dan, personally. I mean, I've been to all the card shows. Well, not all of them, but many of them. And I don't see that. I don't see that. Now, with basketball, there's really only, you know, three vintage sets before 1970. You know, it really is. There's not a lot of choice there. So that's a huge barrier against there being a ton of vintage basketball collectors. But then then 68 or 69 hits, and you got a lot more sets. And I think there are collectors of that. And especially when you have, especially in the 1980 tops when that came out, I think now you're seeing people who collect 80 tops. And then the kind of maybe the odd people that dabble in Star. And then 86 Fleer is when it really obviously starts. And of course, Upper Deck in 1991. But I agree with Dan. There are collectors of basketball and football. For sure there are. But on a like per capita basis within the sport, I think it's just very small compared to baseball and hockey for that matter. And Turpin Forrester says basketball has a strong Asia Europe market that keeps basketball strong with America. Yeah, like that's a great call out right there too, Turp. I definitely agree with that. And there was a comment about soccer. Decoy says soccer won't get mentioned, but they're incredibly dedicated. So much history in it globally that North America is a bit behind on it due to the other sports. I think we're behind on it because we just don't care as much. I don't think North Americans care if you have a connection to your team over in Europe. But for the most part, North Americans don't care nearly as much about soccer as they do about baseball in the States, hockey in Canada. The NFL is a beast in and of itself. So, Stephen, any comments on that kind of stuff?
Well, to Decoy's comment, I haven't been tracking it closely, but hasn't the soccer market in general tanked? That's what I'm seeing, because I have some like really nice Mbappe stuff, and it's just down so much. So it's like they might have a dedicated fan base or a collector base, but they're not necessarily driving up the prices of soccer cards right now.
Yeah. John here says, Jeremy, are you excited about Upper Deck adding a one-of-one young guns? That's a great question, John. I think it was inevitable, first of all. I think it was inevitable. But your question is, am I excited about it? Listen, I'm somewhat indifferent, John. I think it's going to add excitement, especially when Series 2 comes out with the Connor Bedard. That will be interesting, and I'd like you to ask me again at that time. But I can tell you unequivocally, I don't own a single Young Guns. People come up to me at card shows and say, are you looking to buy or trade? And they show me a Young Gun. I say, I don't do Young Guns. I deliberately just don't do Young Guns for what it's worth. There's no real great reason for it. I just, everyone else has them. So I don't do Young Guns. Now, not everyone else has the one of one. But does it, am I excited about it? I don't think I'm excited. I'm interested. I'm interested in it. How about you, Steven? I know you don't do a lot of hockey, but what are your thoughts on that?
I know that card's going to go. That one of one Bedard's going to go crazy. That's the type of card that's going to bring people into the hockey space that aren't in the hockey space.
Right.
Which in turn should drive up hockey.
And there will be bounties placed on that card. I'm obviously convinced of that. Are you willing to put just take a guess what you think we'll see in terms of bounties on the Connor Bedard one of one? I forget what outburst or sunburst. Do you know what's, I forget what they're called.
So let's do this. Do you know, because I don't know comps on hockey, what's the McDavid go for? Just a PSA 10.
Just a PSA 10 Young Gun?
Yeah.
Like I think they're like $2,500 to $3,000 maybe in there somewhere.
All right. So what's Bedard in this market is probably going to do what? Like $700-$800 maybe?
For a PSA 10?
Yeah. Because it's going to be way more of them, right?
It's going to be more. I think Raw, they're going to come out at a grand. All right. Don't underestimate the allure. And I know the allure of the hottest, most recent rookie.
First comps and everything. Yeah. All right. So what do you think they settle in at? Like $1,500 to $2,000? He can't go for more than McDavid, can it?
Oh, sure it can.
You think he settles in at that?
Well, set how long down the road?
Like, I mean, it's 3 months. 3 months.
Yeah.
Of the first PSA 10
set. After it comes out, we'll be in the summer. It's a tough time, right? PSA, are we talking PSA 10 or are we talking Raw?
Yeah, just PSA 10. If a McDavid does, you said $2,500?
I could be $3,000, call it, somewhere in there. All right.
So, like, what can the bounty be then on that one of one? What's it worth? That was my next question. What's it going to be worth? So, is 100K too high or too low?
I think it's going to be more, personally.
So, all right. So then, if you had the opportunity to buy it, right? Funds, unlimited funds, you have the opportunity to buy it. 250K, is that what the card's worth?
I can see, yeah, Terp just put that in the chat right as you said. I can see the bounty being 250 minimum. I can see the bounty being $500,000 on that card.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. If the card's 250, the bounty's gotta be more. So like I could see like $500,000 on the bounty. I really could.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
More maybe. If somebody wants to stir it up, they could have $1 million on the bounty.
I can see it being encroaching upon $1 million. For the one-on-one Connor Bedard. I mean, he's hurt right now, which might hurt his Young Guns upon release a little bit, but right now it's not hurting his cards that are out there. He seems to be the real deal. I don't think he's as good as McDavid. I don't think he'll be as good as McDavid, but that doesn't really matter in the card market. It doesn't really matter. It's all about potential. He now has 20 years ahead of him to win Stanley Cups and win Hart trophies and Art Ross trophies. Whereas McDavid has the Harts and the Art Rosses, but he doesn't have the Stanley. And you know, Bedard also, there's 20 years to win the Stanley Cup. McDavid needs to win the Stanley Cup for his prices to, I think, stay where they are in the long term, or at least, you know, continue along the same path that they've been on over time. So, I think that the Bedard hype is real, and he's a great player. Don't get me wrong. Will he be the second best player in the league? I mean, maybe. It's going to be, you know, you got a few other good guys up there with Pasternak and Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon, who's just beast moding right now. You know, stuff to say. And I want a lot of people to understand this too. The Edmonton Oilers today won their 16th game in a row, and they're one away from the league record. So two away from owning the record. But if you look at who they've beat over those games, not including today, it's like no team is better than 15th in the league. So all the teams that they beat along the way are in the bottom half of the NHL standing. So as impressive as it is, you have to take it with a grain of salt. I don't want to take anything away from them. I think it's awesome. But anyway, all of that there. Decoy Cards here says, if you pull it yourself, hide it, then buy up every case you can. Yeah, right? If you pull the card, right? I mean, that's market manipulation at its finest. But whoever, if someone does it on the down low, that's a strategy that somebody might take, right? So,
not all right. Regulated.
Hey?
I said unregulated. Again, right, exactly. It's not regulated. It's not.
Exactly. All right, man. We're getting to the point of winding this up. Actually, let's do this comment here. I want to get your answer to this. Bob's Big Boy just puts this in. Aren't these bounties unhealthy in the long term? Feels like another step towards games of chance and lotto scratch-offs. Feels like an artificial stimulus. Aren't the cards strong enough on their own? So what do you see? The world of bounties on some of these big cards we've seen recently. What do you think? Is it unhealthy in the long run?
I mean, it's unhealthy if it's being like the Jordan Walker debut patch bounty was put out by a collector that wanted the card. The Brady 12 of 50 is put out by a collector that wants the card, you know? So it's like, that's what that person wants. If somebody wants to put a price on it themselves, it's a bounty, but it's from a collector that wants that in their collection. It's never going to leave. The bounties by like David Adams, I mean, they could do whatever they want at the end of the day because they're selling the wax as well. So they're putting their money where their mouth is. You know, if you hit it and you want to sell it to us for 500K, we'll take it. You know, so it's not really lotto scratch off. It's somebody putting a price on it, and the card they're putting a price on isn't worthless to begin with. So that's just right. An extra incentive.
It's a, I think I agree with that last bit right there in that with or without the bounty, there already are unspoken bounties on these cards. Cause you know, as soon as you get that, you hit that card yourself, you're going to be able to cash in. Bounty or not, you're going to be able to cash in. I think really the sentiment from Bob's Big Boy is the fact that they're out there kind of like, is it just helping to drive the demand for the unopened product, which of course it is. I have to think that when an LCS puts out a bounty on a card, part in their mind, it must be to drive demand. What do you see the benefits are for a David Adams to put it? Why are they putting bounties on cards, do you think?
I mean, they're selling the wax themselves, you know, on their site. So if it's going to drum up traffic and you're going to make more sales, I'm sure, you know, if the card's worth 100K, 300K, and you're paying more than it's worth, you're making it back on the wax, you know, in the volume that they do. And it makes it fun, too, at the end of the day. It's like, it's a chase. Everyone wants a treasure hunt, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Mark Santucci. Tries to rank the hockey players. So, Mark, I think you have... So you say 1 McDavid, 2 McKinnon, 3 Matthews. I think 1 and 2 are right. I think 3 is more or less in the 6th spot. I put 3 and 4 as Kucherov and Pastrnak, and that's where I've got them. And then I put Matthews beneath them both, actually, personally. Turpin Forster agrees with these things. Says they recover that money from wax sales. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, part of these bounties is to help elevate the value of the unopened product, which speaks to Big Boy's comment. I mean, it is an artificial stimulus, but at the end of the day, if they're going to cut that check, and again, guys, you listen, I'm not judging it here, but what I will say is that it is the landscape that we are in. We are in that landscape. So we can critique it and judge it and talk about it all we want. But at the end of the day, the only thing that's going to matter to you as an individual is how you adapt and respond to it yourself, right? Everybody, you know, most of us, we're big boys and girls out there. We can decide what we want to do. And if you want to, you know, I'll just use the simple term, fall for it. Well, that's on you. I mean, that's on you. And I'll take responsibility for myself in this space. I'm not going to take responsibility for anybody else. If you are going to do that and you're going to buy more product at the elevated price because there are bounties out there on it, good. You have a chance at cashing in on that bounty. So listen, I'm not saying I like it or don't like it. I'm just saying that it's the world we live in. And as a participant in this hobby, I'm going to adapt accordingly so that it works for me. And I implore you all to do what you need to do to make it work for you as well. So
you know,
comment on all that, Stephen.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just marketing. It's no different. No different than the Monopoly game at McDonald's. It's no different. They're driving sales for you to buy more McDonald's and you're trying to get Park Place. You know, and it's a race to the million. It's the same thing. And they're going to give it to you if you get it. It's marketing.
Oh, there is one catch to that specific example, which was that whole thing was rigged back in the day.
It might have been. I don't know. But
there's a documentary on it. Yeah. But and then now you know that even at the level of McDonald's, these things can be rigged. And it was someone, I think, at the audit company. It was actually one of their auditors, I believe, that went sideways on the whole thing. And so, you know, again, proceed accordingly, guys. It's like Foul Fiveball said earlier. I don't like breaking. I buy my own cards. Great. Foul Fiveball has figured out how to exist in the hobby and remain happy with his activities. Y'all can do that too. No one is putting a gun to your head and saying, you know, buy this product or that product. Buy the product that there's bounties out on, and you may not hit the big card. No one's putting guns to our heads. So I just, you know, be accountable to yourself, take responsibility, and proceed the way that's going to make sense to you and allow you to remain in the hobby. Hopefully, you're happy in the hobby. A lot of people are. We have a lot of disgruntled hobbyists who stay in anyway. It's like misery loves company. You know, it's like they like to punish themselves. That's fine too. We need those people out there because they are also opening products and helping us get more products into the secondary market where a lot of us like to operate. So, I mean, yeah, I'm all for product getting opened one way or another. I just want the people doing it to not put themselves into financial distress. That's really important to me. I don't want anybody to be in financial trouble, especially if you have a family. I mean, you know, get help if you need it. Get help if you need it, right?
Agree.
Play at your own risk, says Michael. Tom Newman says, this is a great episode. Thank you, Tom. Dave Kaplan, appreciate the comment. Foul Fiveball says, bounties might be business tax deductible. Yes, they are. As soon as you write a check for something, that now becomes, well, they're buying a piece of inventory. They're going to eventually sell that piece of inventory and they're going to get to write off the cost of goods sold on it at that time, I believe, at that time. So, all right. And Mark Santucci says, I'm 85% happy in the hobby. Mark, that's a good rate. I don't think any of us are happy a lot of the time. You know, you own a card, you see it go down in value, you might not be as happy. A lot of people say, I don't care if my cards go to zero. I'm going to be happy. I don't look at these as investments. Good for them. Those guys are really lucky that they can afford to have their cards go down to zero. Personally, I can't. I'm going to get sad if my cards go down to zero. You know, I'm not going to be the happiest kid in Canada if that happens. But I'm also going to know that I put myself into this. I'm not going to blame anybody. I'm going to only look into myself. So anything on that, Steve?
Everybody just do what you want in the hobby, whatever makes you happy. At the end of the day, it is a hobby. I used to say it when I broke every single day. The main thing is you're having fun on the stream because we're not going to be able to take any of this stuff with us when we're gone. So like, no matter what you're doing, no matter how you're collecting, no matter what you're buying, it's just to satisfy you and make you feel complete in this lifetime. Because when it's all done. None of it matters anyway. So just enjoy it.
Yeah. No, fair. Fair for sure. Michael here says, Stephen has a great last name. Must have been first in attendance at school. Abbandondolo. That's how you say it. Abbandondolo. Yep. I got it, right?
You got it.
Nailed it. I nailed it. I didn't in my opening. I flubbed it up in the opening, Stephen, but I, I got it now. I got it now for sure. All right. Anything you'd like to leave the any words of wisdom, anything you'd like to leave the audience with before we wind this up?
I mean, I just want everyone to be positive and optimistic about what's to come. Whether you get in breaks, whether you just buy cars from your LCS, whether you just go on eBay and buy singles. The main thing is we're all in this hobby right now together, no matter what segment you're in. And it's getting stronger. And everyone should be happy about that. No matter what part of it you're in, I could almost guarantee that segment has also been getting stronger over the last year, over the last 2-3 years. So it's like, enjoy the ride. I truly do believe we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg was COVID. Now we're leveling out. But what's going to happen with this hobby is going to be like 20x COVID when it's all said and done, when all the pieces are in place, when all the athletes are under the same license, when it's just going to be, I see celebrities getting involved. Like, you're going to have a license. Like, I really truly believe you're going to have a licensed Topps product where you're chasing Drake, you know, you're chasing Kanye, but then you're also chasing Ruth in the same product. Like, it's going to be, you know, everything under one umbrella, and it's going to be like a different world than we're living in right this second.
Yeah. And listen, people are going to complain about that. They're going to say, I'm not buying sports cards to hit cards of Drake or whoever, but don't buy that product then. Like, you don't, that's the thing. There's going to be options for you. And as much, as many products as a Fanatics or a Panini or an Upper Deck or Leaf makes that you don't like, there's going to be just as many that maybe you do. And that's the, you know, think about how far we've come. Back in the 70s and 80s, you know, you had maybe 3 products to choose from. Maybe if you were lucky. In the 70s, you had 1, right? Most of the 80s, you had 1 in at least a couple sports. So now you have your option of like 20 or 30, and you don't have to like them all. That's why they make so many, because they're making them for different segments of the community. They're not making every product for every person. So if you don't like a product, the card company doesn't care that you don't like one of their products. If you don't like 100% of their products, they're going to care a bit more. But if you like one of them, they're probably going to be a little bit happy that you like at least one of them, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to cover all the different segments and even all the different price points, so that, you know, people can buy in for $100. You know, I don't know what the price points are, but say $80 a box or $150 or $10,000. They're going to try and hit all those different price points so that people can take part in it at all different levels. Bob's Big Boy here says, you know, isn't it an assumed sense of hobby omniscience? I don't even know what that means. If we declare that these 10 cards have not been hit, isn't there a chance that someone has won? I don't think anyone's declaring that they're not hit, because that would be irresponsible. That'd be completely irresponsible. It's like, you need that disclaimer that these cards might have been hit. But he says, isn't there a chance that someone has one or more of these cards in their PC and kept it hush hush? Yeah, that's what we were talking about before. We talked about that before in the context of the Bedard discussion, Bob's Big Boy. And I think there's completely that possibility. And that's why you have to proceed accordingly. 100% have to proceed accordingly. 86 says, my wife isn't getting anything. I'm taking my Crosby rookie with me. Bob's Big Boy, love the show and filth bomb content. Keep up the great work, all parties. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Mark Santucci. Always appreciate it. Thanks, 86 says, great show as always. Thank you both for your time. Turp Enforcer, Jeremy, I love your shows. Always informative. Thank you so much, Turp. And Eric Stefano says, awesome show, guys. You nailed it. Thank you, Eric. All right, guys, we are going to wrap this one up. We are going to come in a couple minutes under 2 hours, which is great, where we like to get. So with that, Stephen, final opportunity to say your last words of the show. And, you know, give us a, you know, you're an entrepreneur. You chase something you wanted to do. You wanted to do something that made you happy in life versus being an accountant. And I can completely identify with that. Exactly with that. So give us some words of encouragement before we sign off.
What I would say to everyone in there, anyone in the chat right now, right, is we only have one life. We're only going to live one life. You got to be happy. And if you're doing something right now that you don't necessarily like, don't be afraid to take that chance and do something that you do like. You might be, you know, you might be strapped financially, you might not be able to take that chance, but I promise you, if you take that leap and you do something you love and you give it 150%, it will not feel like you're working, and you'll be able to get to where you need to go to be successful. That would be my final words for everyone in the show right now. Do what you love, and it's really true. You'll feel like you never work another day in your life.
Follow your dreams and passion. Don't, you know, believe in yourself, right? Take some, you know, if you got to just keep in context, you know, it depends. If you have a family and you got to pay the bills and you can't afford to go a year without making much money, just be careful with some of the risks you take. But I do agree, Stephen, we only live once, so make the most of it. Michael, thank you so much. Foul Flyball says, I'm happy to have this hobby. I have my opinions and stick to them. They might not all be positive. That's okay. Jeremy, Bob's big boy. What is the bounty on growing a Coach Co mustache? Very good, very good. And John Yo says, you need to be a realistic Chase, Bob. That's a one of one for sure. All right, guys. Thank you to the chat for joining us. Excuse me. Fighting this cough still. Thank you to the chat. Appreciate all your comments and questions tonight. Stephen, thank you for coming on, man. Had fun. Happy to. I told you earlier, I don't think I've ever had a breaker on, but I did. I had one on probably 3 years ago now, maybe 3.5 years ago. So you're the first one in that amount of time. So thanks for coming on. And thanks for facing some of the tough questions along the way. Appreciate it.
Of course.
So thank you.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. Had a great time.
You are welcome. All right, guys. That's it for Saturday night. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next Saturday as well. We'll see you tomorrow on the PWCC Weekly Hockey and Monday on the MC Mondays Live. And with that, this episode of Sports Cards Live is over. Steve, you stay right there.